This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Well, I didn't think you had it in you.
I'm your huckleberry.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Why, Johnny Ringo, you look like somebody just walked over your grave.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Fight's not with you, Holiday.
I beg to differ, sir. We started a game we never got to finish. Play for blood, remember?
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
I was just fooling about.
I wasn't.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on Portland's number one sports radio station, 1080 The Fan. Up Tuesday afternoon's going well. Ours is going to get a little bit better here as the Washington Post national NBA writer Ben Golliver is going to join us now. And he's on Twitter, at Ben Golliver. He just got home. The NBA season ended. What was that? Sunday night, right? Yeah, Sunday evening is when the Lakers wrapped up another championship. LeBron gets his fourth. And he's back. He's in his casa at home, and he joins us. Ben, thanks for hopping on with us today, man. First, let me just ask, it's got to be kind of a weird feeling now that you're out of that bubble to just move around freely and not have to test yourself every second of every day. What's it been like so far?
No, it's super weird. I mean, like you said, it's officially over. I took my suit that was soaked in champagne to the dry cleaner, so we're done with the bubble officially today. No, it was really weird yesterday, guys. I mean, I'm not sure if Florida knows there's a pandemic or not, but walking through that airport was just really, really dicey. And granted, I'm coming from a situation where, you know, we're locked down super tight. There's crazy regulations. You know, our lives are being monitored practically minute by minute, right? And to go through an airport where, you know, some people have the mask on, some people don't, you know, TSA has got this huge line backed up. Everybody's kind of in close proximity. It was pretty spooky, I'm not going to lie. And, you know, it does feel good to be back here in LA where I think people take this thing very seriously. And so that's good. But, you know, it's strange. I mean, even driving a car today, guys, I had to teach myself how to drive my car. It's first time in 3 months. I've been behind the wheel.
That is amazing. That's a long time to go without driving. That could be a little weird. But what was the vibe like? I loved watching your Instagram stories and just kind of following along with the celebration and LeBron spraying you with the champagne. But we were all kind of watching and wondering. Obviously, you can't match winning a championship in the mood in an arena, whether it's at home or on the road. But you've been to NBA Finals games over the years. Like, just how did that stack up? What was it like? Lakers win. What was the emotions like there?
It was so strange because this finals was one of the least memorable finals, most forgettable finals that I've covered out of the last 10. But I actually think it was the best celebration I've ever covered. I know that sounds weird because there's no fans there. You know, you're not even doing it in front of the home crowd. You don't get the satisfaction of, you know, punking the road crowd either, right? So both of those can kind of add their elements. But it was just the relief factor that everybody gets to go home. I'm sure you saw the video of Danny Green running into the locker room and just shouting, you know, we're bleeping free, you know, and he's just so excited that they know basically they're all going to be home the next day. It was this giant feeling of relief, I think satisfaction for the Lakers, and they were loving it. And the other cool part, too, is the arena area is not that big. So from the reporter standpoint, we're like right on top of these guys, right? And we're able to kind of get in on the champagne. Obviously, LeBron is smoking the cigar, and we're kind of following him around as he's calling his mom for that you know, very kind of emotional, heartfelt phone call. And they were just all so, so happy. So for me, I'll remember that celebration probably better than any other one that I've ever covered. And there was a lot of guys who were first-time champions, and that makes a big difference too, right? Because they're experiencing a guy like Dwight Howard, you know, and that's maybe a tough storyline for people to wrap their minds around. He's not necessarily the most popular player, but you know, his career comes full circle there. Frank Vogel, he gets to win his first title. Obviously, Anthony Davis wins his first title, and he got very emotional. So you add it all up, even though it was a weird environment, It was very, very memorable.
Yeah, Ben Golliver is our guest here. Washington Post covers the NBA, does an exceptional job as well. Two podcasts as well, The Greatest of All Talk podcast and The Open Floor pod. Give him a follow on Twitter at Ben Golliver. Naturally, LeBron wins. It then stirs up the debate again between him and MJ or where he ranks all time for people. And I said this yesterday, most people are never going to change their mind. No matter what happens, there's people that will always just be LeBron. There's people that always just be Jordan. I think one advantage he has been, and I want to get your thoughts on just the legacy part of winning a fourth title. I think one thing he'll kind of have over MJ, though, is not only the longevity of winning, but you just listed the cast of characters who, when this team signed those guys, many people said, what? Rondo? Dwight? KCP? Those aren't guys you can win with. J.R. Smith was believed to be that before he got to Cleveland. He's won with guys that many didn't think you could actually win anything with. I think that's an advantage he's going to have. What did the four title do for you? And what are your thoughts on just that never-ending conversation between him and MJ?
Well, I think the key difference between Michael and LeBron on the stuff that you're talking about with the roster building and making some of these role player teammates kind of stand out and be better. Michael is a franchise player. The Chicago Bulls built around him for more than a decade. LeBron is a franchise, right? I mean, wherever you drop him, he's moving from spot to spot. He's orchestrating trades. He's trying to build super teams. You know, Rich Paul is right there to help him. I mean, you guys probably heard him say a couple of weeks ago, his quote specifically, that's why I got Anthony Davis in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. You know, LeBron was the one who said that. And so, I mean, that's not something that you typically hear from a player of any previous generation. So LeBron's been responsible for that. Now, when I look at, you know, where do I stand on the GOAT debate, if there was ever a moment for me to be pulled over to LeBron's side, it would be when he's spraying me with champagne after he wins the title and he in the wild, right? I get to go home back to my home in Los Angeles as well. And I'll tell you, after 24 hours of reflection, I'm still on Team Mike, man. I'm not sure I'm ever going to change from that. Mm-hmm. I think if you look at just the size and scope of the fans that he had compared to, you know, what LeBron's dealing with now. I mean, just orders of magnitude more people were watching Michael do it than LeBron. And so I think from the popularity standpoint, from the emotional connection, inspiring an entire generation, including LeBron, the 6-0 finals, all the stats that you guys probably have memorized. I'm still on Team Mike, but it was a phenomenal performance from LeBron. And I don't want anyone to undercut or try to put an asterisk on this title. The bubble was tough. It was not fun. It was grueling. It was a long run. And he outlasted guys who were 10 and 15 years younger than him, including, you know, guys like Damian Lillard in their prime, James Harden in their prime, Jamal Murray in an absolute incredible month of basketball, Nikola Jokic, Jimmy Butler playing the best basketball he's ever played. This was not the 73-win Warriors. You know, he didn't beat a team like that. But he beat an awful lot of good players, and he was the best player in the bubble to me.
Yeah, I don't want to turn the page too quickly, Ben, because you just got home and it was a crazy journey. But I'm already, as a Blazer fan, thinking towards next season, and I can't wait to watch, like, counting down the days for the start. Just on that, like, how do you think that's going to shape out? Like, when do you think they're going to try and begin the season? How many games should they try and play next year? Like, what do you think next year looks like?
Well, their stated goal is to play as many games as possible in as many arenas as possible in front of as many fans as possible. Now, the only problem is all of those things are variables, right? They don't have a day that they would necessarily want to start. They've said it won't be before January at the very earliest. Talking to some teams, including the Trailblazers president, Chris McGowan, recently, he said they're going to be ready to welcome fans back with all new procedures whenever possible, but they're going to have to get sign-off from the local government, right, and they're going to have to get an NBA-wide plan as well in terms of how they want to go forward and do this thing with the pandemic still going on. So, you know, it's very possible they open next season and they're not in a position to have, like, large-scale fans. It might have to be, you know, a restricted thing. I mean, they just don't know that yet. The thing is, the first step, they have to negotiate with the players to set the financial terms for next season, just like they negotiated the terms of the bubble. So that's going to be an extended process. It's going to take a while. They're still missing billions in revenue from all the fans they weren't able to have in the arenas last year and some of the lost television revenue. So that has to be made up for in some way. They're all optimistic those talks are going to go well. But I do think it could take a little bit here. So I think the next thing that people to look for is the draft in November. Free agency should be around late November, early December, and then the season will be following, you know, at some point after that. But if it gets pushed into February or late January for the start of next season, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And if you just kind of speed that forward, that means they're probably playing the finals again Maybe in August next year, maybe September.
Yeah. Ben Golliver's our guest here, Washington Post. He just got back from the bubble. Now, let me ask you about the Western Conference, because LeBron and the Lakers aren't going anywhere, right? The Clippers are coming back, presumably. Maybe they built some camaraderie through the adversity that they went through. The Nuggets, look what they were able to accomplish. Obviously, Portland is in this mix. Golden State is coming back healthy. The West is loaded. I don't need to list every team. You know that better than anybody. Do you think if Neil O'Shea was to give you a call, and we largely out here just think he's going to stand pat, keep everybody as is, and hope that things break his way. But if he was to call Ben Golliver and say, Ben, should I take a risk and make a big move and hope that it's the right move to get Dame in the position to compete for a championship, or should I just stand pat and bring everybody back? What would you say to him?
Well, first of all, as a Western Conference elitist, it sure is nice to have the Larry O'Brien trophy back where it belongs, right? I mean, I think 14-7 since 2000, it's just really nice that, this conference can represent. It's the superior conference for a long time. It's very nice to have that. Even I know in Portland, they're not happy the Lakers have it, but come on, guys, we'd rather have it than the Eastern Conference. Now, in terms of what the Blazers should do and the way things shake out in the West for next year, I would say this. One of the blessings of the bubble is that you can, even though I don't want to put an asterisk on what the Lakers did, we don't know how much any of it will translate back to a normal playoff format, right? Like, if you put the Clippers at home for game 5 against the Nuggets in Staples Center, they don't lose that game, and they definitely don't blow a 3-1 lead if two of those games are at home, right? So I think they're better than they looked in the bubble. I think you can make an argument that the Lakers, if they had to go on the road and play some of these teams that they played, maybe they wouldn't have looked as good. Would they have gotten through Portland as quickly as they did if they had to play some of those games in the Moda Center? I'm not convinced about that, right? So I think there's a lot of variables that, you know, you're trying to handicap what the landscape looks like, and there's just a lot of unknowns based on what translates from the bubble and what doesn't. Is Jamal Murray still going to be like a guy who looked like a top 15 player in the league when he was in the bubble? I'm not convinced of that necessarily either. So I think if you're Portland, you want to weigh all of those factors. You obviously want to be deliberate with what you're doing and realizing that this was a unique experience. You had a lot of positives from your bubble run and making the playoffs that you can build on. But you also don't want to necessarily overreact to what happened in Orlando. Now, at the same time, I don't think they're going to be in position to answer your question to make some sort of a big move. I think financially, when you've got those giant contracts they've already got, you're pretty much backed into a corner. I think you're probably going to pitch it as, hey, Nurkic is back healthy. You're going to try to bring back Carmelo. Those are going to be sort of your big off-season moves if you want to look at it that way. And then you also hope Zach Collins is healthy. And again, you're going to have the front court that you expected to have last year before all the injuries hit. I mean, to me, I think that's probably the way that they're going to play it. Of course, if someone wants my advice, I'm always going to say, yeah, swing for the fences, try to go out and find that talent. But I'm not sure that talent is really available to them right now. And I think it's going to be kind of a quiet offseason from a player movement standpoint. There's not that many big stars available in free agency. And I think a lot of teams are just going to be cost conscious. They don't want to spend the money right now if they don't have their arenas fully open, able to, bring as many fans into the building.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask about just the spending of this offseason. It's kind of unique. And I know that they can set the CBA number, was it like force majeure or whatever it's called in the CBA, that allows them, even when revenues are down, to set the CBA level or the salary cap level, excuse me. But do you expect there to be guys who are better than average players that end up going on cheaper deals because teams are just pinching pennies and not wanting to spend?
I think so. I also think you're going to see a lot of short-term contracts. You're going to see a lot of agents advise, like, look, this year is going to be kind of rocky, but once business gets back to normal, it's going to be sort of like that summer of 2016 where there was that crazy spending spree. And so any free agent that was lined up with the summer of 2016 got those crazy huge deals, like the Evan Turner-type deals. Mm-hmm. I think if you're an agent, you're saying, hey, try to get yourself on that cycle. Maybe you want to be on the summer of 2021. Maybe you want to be on the summer of 2022. Where the NBA's financial picture is back after the pandemic, buildings are all completely open, and owners, have money burning a hole in their pocket. I mean, I think that would be my advice if I was an agent. I just don't think that there's going to be that much salary cap room available this summer. And also, there's just not that many great players to spend it on. And I do think that we've seen, some teams learn the lesson, and Portland included. You don't want to spend star money for a guy who's not actually a star. You get yourself back into a corner when you do that. I'm referring to like the Mo Harkless situation or the Evan Turner situation, all these other contracts that were just sort of lingering for them, for a while, the Allen Crabbe situation. You don't want to do that again. So I do think there's been some lessons learned by all executives around the league since 2016. I think that's going to apply here as we go forward the next couple of years.
Was your mental health okay during all of it, man? It's got to be kind of a weird thing to be in a hotel room and just travel back and forth to an arena and never see people that, you know, personal people, family, friends, et cetera, and be gone that long. Were you doing all right?
Oh, it was exhausting. And I would say that, I mean, more than anything, it was just tiring because we're up until 3 a.m. every single night. The fact that we didn't have to fly, though, was actually great. That was like the biggest benefit because the playoffs are always exhausting, and not changing time zones, not going through the hassle of the airport for 3 months was awesome. I think I'm going to look back on the bubble as the most challenging and most rewarding assignment that I'm ever going to have in my life. Like, I don't know really how you would top it if you really think about it. I mean, getting to be in close proximity with the best players in the world for 3 straight months and, you know, living pretty well at Disney World. I mean, it wasn't fancy accommodations for sure, but it was comfortable. And, you know, obviously I leave with a lot of pride in the work that I did too, but yeah, man, it was a grind. Look, and don't let anybody tell you different. If they're trying to write this thing off or, oh, you know, of course the Lakers won. I mean, there was no guarantees here. They had to go day by day, hour by hour, sort of like the rest of us. And I'm just glad I got the opportunity to do it. And I'm really looking forward actually to the next 3 or 4 months, just putting my head down and writing a book all about it so that people sort of know what this was like 20 or 30 years from now, because it was just so unique, so random, so one of a kind of whimsical at times, but also like super grueling, like I mentioned. So, you know, it was a big gumbo of emotions. And, you know, I'll never forget. I'll tell you that.
Well, you did awesome. A great job, man. I kudos to you and all the media as well, because I know the players get a lot of credit, as they should, but you guys deserve a lot of credit too. A lot of sacrifice from a lot of people, from family and friends, to live somewhere, to cover a sport and give us all that content, like watching LeBron spray you in the face with champagne. Had to have been a cool experience, once in a lifetime. And you've got that book. You want to plug it real quick?
Yeah, Bubble Ball. You can go on Amazon and pre-order it. Barnes & Noble, it'll be in Pals, I'm sure, if it's not already. And I got to write it, though, first. That's the thing. It's like I'm already out here hawking this thing to you guys, but I haven't even written a page yet. So I better get started on it, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. There we go. Great stuff. Washington Post National NBA reporter Ben Golliver on Twitter, at Ben Golliver. Welcome back home, my man. Great job covering the NBA. And we'll catch up soon in Pub Bubble Ball when you get it done.
I can't wait, guys. All right, take care, and hope everybody's safe and sound.
All right, there we go. Ben Golliver of the Washington Post wrapping up our NBA stuff.
Awesome job by him, everybody that was there. Yep. We pay a lot of attention to the players, and they sacrifice a lot to be there for months on end, but so did all the league employees, the officials, the broadcasters, the journalists. Hats off to all of them for a job well done.
Hey, did you ever think about doing this as a kid? Because I know I did, and this kid lived the dream. That's next on The Fan. All right, we got NFL True or False coming up. This magic moment. So get this story. Louisiana authorities arrested an 11-year-old boy Sunday after he stole a bus and drove away as they tried to stop him.
Now, what kind of bus are we talking about here?
School bus.
He stole a school bus?
Police received a call about the incident at 10:45 a.m. local time. Multiple police units followed the bus as the child allegedly taunted and flipped the officers off and struck other vehicles while driving.
Oh, God.
The officer said, quote, the male juvenile crashed the school bus around 11:25 a.m. into a tree after crashing into 3 vehicles and fleeing from officers. The boy left the scene unscathed, but a driver in one of the struck vehicles during the hit and run suffered a minor injury. Police said it was unclear how the 11-year-old acquired the keys to the school bus at Baton Rouge Head Start.
What?
The child is charged with theft of a vehicle, aggravated flight, 3 counts of damaged property, and 1 count of aggravated assault. They said they're not sure how he drove the bus, although many believe he had to stand straight up to reach the pedal, and while doing so would occasionally stick his left hand out the window to flip the officers off.
First off, let me say, thankfully everybody's okay, so we can laugh about this situation, because a kid, like, I'm just envisioning him, his tiny little legs and arms trying to reach the pedals and have to, like, steer the bus. I don't even know if I would feel confident driving a bus at this point.
Oh, man, I always wanted to just take a bus for a joyride.
Let alone an 11-year-old. What is this, Grand Theft Auto? This kid's been playing too many video games, man. You can't be doing that, just running into people with no consequences.
God, what do you do if you're the parents, too? You get that call, you're like, hey, your 11-year-old just stole a school bus and damaged property and, you know, minor injury to somebody and was flipping cops off. What do you even say to that?
Yeah, there's normal kid trouble. Every kid eventually gets into trouble. Then they're stealing a school bus and running into cars all over the place and causing property damage.
I'm just thinking of a kid in like a Adam Sandler movie for some reason.
Yelling out the window, flipping
sticking
everybody
his
off.
Hand out, flipping the bird.
Yeah, I wonder what if like the bus driver spurned him a little bit.
Role models. I'm thinking of role models. When he steals the car. Do you remember that scene?
Oh, yeah. He's rolling out of the parking lot.
He can't even see. He's like laying all the way down to hit the gas.
Hit the brake, man. Like, dear Lord, dude. Yeah, I don't like that. I think I would be a terrible bus driver. Trying to back it up, move it around, navigate
Right now?
Like, even currently, I would be terrible at driving a bus.
Well, how often do the buses back up?
I mean, not often.
They kind of just quit
just
and
go
pull around. And
I'm just saying, shout out to the bus drivers out there, because I would be terrible at that. Like, judging the angles of curves and turns and not running into cars when you're taking a sharp turn. Yeah. I would be awful at that.
Yeah, here's the other question I had about this story. When you charge an 11-year-old with theft of a vehicle, aggravated flight, 3 counts of damaged property, and aggravated assault, does that go away when you turn 18? Yeah, does that stay on your record forever? Does this kid go to juvie for this?
I would imagine you're going to be in juvie for a while.
Those sound like pretty serious charges. Yeah. Aggravated assault?
Yeah. I'm not an expert on the legal system here, but I would imagine you're going to be in juvie probably until the age of... What's the limit? 16, 18, however long you can be a juvie for.
Yeah, whatever that is.
And then I don't know if you ever expunge it completely from the record, but maybe lessen it slightly. The older you get, you allow them back into society. But yeah, that's going to be a long run in juvie, I would imagine.
Boy, I think of the stupid things I did as an 11-year-old, and it doesn't come close to this, like, at all.
No, yeah, somebody said this kid's an O'Doyle. It sounds like a future Ricky Bobby. Yeah, Doyle rules.
Yeah, Ricky Bobby's a good one, too, in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of dumb stuff when I was a kid. I ran from the cops far too many times to count. Like, that was more of a high school age, not a younger age. Parties and...
What were you doing to run from the cops
like,
a ton?
Like, drinking parties and stuff when you're 16, 17 years old. Like, I'm not going to stay
around. How
bad
were you guys at planning parties? Like, how'd you get caught?
A lot of our stuff would be, like, we'd do outdoor parties and stuff, and they would eventually show up to whatever outdoor location you were at, and then it was a survival of the fittest, every man for themselves. The slow people and the drunk girls would get MIPs and everybody else would get away.
Yeah, I mean, that's the old, just run faster than the next person and you'll be fine.
You just got to outlast the person next to you and you'll be okay.
Yeah, I think the dumbest thing we did was either throw pennies off the roof at Lloyd Center at cars.
Yeah, that's pretty dumb.
Or we used to egg houses. I hate to admit that, but we did. And I threw an egg one time at a really nice house. Because a bit of anger as a poor kid. And I was like, screw you.
Yeah.
Threw the egg. The egg did not break. It went right through the window.
Did somebody give you a hard-boiled one? How'd you screw that up? How did it not break?
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. And it wasn't a hard-boiled egg. We had just bought them, ran over, and started egging houses.
That's a hard egg right there.
I know. You ain't gonna do stupid things when you're a kid. All right. Well, from an 11-year-old stealing a bus and taking a joyride to NFL True or False. What a transition that is, huh?
Seamless.
NFL True or False is next. We got crunch time around the corner and the mail sack at 2:15. We'll also dive into a story coming out of Oregon about what this offense is going to look like with Joe Moorhead. We've got an update on Florida as they're experiencing an increase in positive COVID tests among players this week. So we'll have an update on that as well. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with NFL True or False.
Hey, welcome back in 1:33. Got a couple other fun stories to get to in the final hour. Do you guys see the hiker that was stalked by the cougar?
Oh, I watched the whole video.
What the hell?
6 minutes. I also had a... You might have this as a tease.
Uh-huh.
Did you see the law lady?
The law student? No.
Oh, my God.
I was going to bring up the lady that confronted her fiancé in a Target and demanded to get married sight on scene.
Oh, yeah.
Brought a pastor in
over
with her.
Over the weekend.
Say, we're doing this right now and we're not doing it at all.
And he basically was like, can we go talk outside? Yeah. And then she's like, okay, we'll talk outside. And she's like waving at her. No, there was a gal was pregnant and she had to take her bar exam.
Oh, I did see this.
And if you get up and leave in the middle of it, You can't get it. And she had to give labor and take the test.
And she passed.
She passed.
That's going to be the greatest lawyer of all time.
I mean, you think about hiring somebody that can execute that, right?
Dear Lord, man, that was awesome. Mail sack coming up in the final hour, too. Get your questions in 503-250-1080. They can be sports or non-sports related. Let's get to NFL True or False, though, shall we? Grading out last week. Look, I don't want to humble brag here, but I had a really good week. 3-0 in Sprague in the line. 3-0 in the fan pick'em. in a winner-winner chicken dinner at NFL True or False. Let's get on my level, boys.
What's your record on the year?
We don't keep seasonal records, just week by week. We just go week by week.
Okay? Only when he wins, there's only...
What have you done for me lately?
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
I was 3-1. You guys were 2-2. So it's a close race. Here's how we did. Kirk Cousins will throw for 400 yards against the Seahawks. We said true. Or no, would not. The Seahawks will hold him below 400 yards. Yes. Sorry, I read that wrong. We all got it right. He did not throw 400 yards. Yeah, 249. There will be no double-digit rallies in week 5 for wins.
I don't think there wasn't, was there?
There was two.
There was three.
There was one last night.
There was three. New Orleans was up 20-3.
Oh, yeah, touche.
The Giants were up 17-3 on Dallas.
Yep,
and
right.
Tampa Bay was up 13-0 on Chicago. There's three of them. You and I got that right. Swigard, you got that wrong.
Okay.
At least two of the winless teams will get their first win of the season. That was false. Swigard and I got that right. Sprague, you said true. The Texans were the only one because the Falcons lost to Carolina. The Jets, of course, lost.
And the Giants
and
blew
And the
it.
Giants blew the lead. So there's still three winless teams. And then the Breeze will throw for over 300 yards against the Chargers. We all got that wrong. Well, he threw for 325.
That was absolute horse crap of a 300-yard game. He was dumping 8-yard passes, and they'd run it 13 yards. I hate that.
Hey, the over hit in the Red River shootout because of overtime. So sometimes it benefits you. But we all got it. He threw for 325.
All right, number one today. The Cleveland Browns attempting to end their franchise 16-game losing streak at Pittsburgh this Sunday. They've lost their last 16 trips to Pittsburgh. It's the third longest such streak in NFL history. Now, the Browns lead the NFL in rushing yards. The Steelers have allowed the second fewest rushing yards so far. True or false, the Browns will rush for more than 125 yards against Pittsburgh this Sunday.
That's a hell of a losing streak.
That is a long losing streak.
If it's third, who's behind them?
I do think, by the way, that it continues this weekend. I actually really like that line, too. Pittsburgh's favorite somewhere in the range of 3.5 to 4.
Yeah.
I actually really like the Steelers. But their forte is running the football, and I think their offensive line is legit. And Kareem Hunt is still healthy, even though Chubb is out. He's doing a great job. They can run the ball on almost anybody. I just have questions about Baker that linger. I say this is true. I think Baker can have a couple of scrambles. They use the wide receivers in the run game. I pretty well remember the Odell reverse that went for like a 60-yard touchdown against Dallas. Plus Kareem Hunt, I think they can get there as a team, 125. I'll say true.
Miles Sanders and the Eagles were able to get some runs. One big run from Miles Sanders on Sunday. I will say this is true. I think Stefanski has a really good offense that can open things up, and you get Baker with those 6-yard out routes to Jarvis or Odell or anybody else on that team. I think it's going to open things up. Johnson and Hunt look good. I'll say this is true.
I think this is false. The Steelers only giving up 64 yards per game on the ground. So for them to give up double, essentially, their season total, I think they're going to totally try and stuff the box and make Baker beat them and prove he can do it and not throw picks. So
hold on. Gosh dang the internet.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah, I'll let you come back to it.
Number two, after each of the last 2 weeks of this NFL season, a head coach has been fired. Bill O'Brien, week 4 by the Texans. Dan Quinn this last week by the Falcons. True or false, there will be another head coach fired after week 6 of the NFL season?
This is false.
You don't think Gase is going to be
gone? No, I said this yesterday. I think they're going to keep Gase all year. I think you want to keep him around. You want the number one overall pick. Keep that idiot around. Le'Veon Bell's demanding a trade. They reportedly are putting him on the market.
Yeah, they're going to try and trade him. He's due a bonus by like Thursday, and they're going to try and flip him before then.
He's just now contemplating like giving up play calling duties, which is hilarious. Yeah, I don't think anybody's getting fired.
Yeah, I'm trying to rattle through if there's any other chances of other coaches. Doug Marrone, probably not, although I think his time will eventually come to an end in Jacksonville. Outside of that, everybody else has. I'm with Sprague on this one. I will say false, although if you lose to Miami, I mean, that's a divisional team that openly tanked for like a year and a half and has clearly already jumped you in the standings.
But you lost to the Broncos with their third or fourth string quarterback.
And it wasn't enough, yes. Right. And you also, Arizona mopped the floor with you. I think 30-10 was the final of that game. You fall to 0-6. I mean, he should get fired, but I'm with Sprague. I don't think they will. I'll say this is false.
I think this is true. Because, and I think, you know, the ownership of the Jets is a little twitchy, too. I don't know if he can stomach, if they lose badly.
To the Dolphins?
To the Dolphins.
Which can happen. And the Dolphins just ran through the 49ers.
They sure did. Russell Wilson's latest Houdini act for the Seahawks moved him past Matthew Stafford for the most fourth quarter or overtime game-winning drive since 2012. He now has 30. True or false, Matthew Stafford will pull back into a tie with him this week against the Jaguars. The Seahawks enjoy their bye week.
This is false because I don't think Detroit's going to have to come back to win this game. Jacksonville can be competitive. They're maybe slightly better than we gave them credit for coming into the season. They hung tough for the most part with Houston in that game, but you look at the final score, Houston pulls away late. I don't think Detroit's going to – they're coming off a bye week, and I don't think they're going to be in a position to be trailing in the fourth quarter to Jacksonville, so I say that this is false.
Yeah, do you really trust Detroit? You're pretty confident in the Lions.
No, I don't trust Detroit.
They've blown all their leads when they've had them against the Packers,
against the Saints. They have, but they've at least built leads, unlike Jacksonville, who's outside of that game in week one hasn't been great.
I'm going to say true. I do think the Lions win, but it's so Lions to be losing to the Jags in the fourth quarter. I'll say true.
I think it's true, too. I think the Lions will play down to their competition, and then all of a sudden Stafford will pull something out at the end because the Jags just don't have enough on the old depth chart.
That's a great stat for Stafford, but again, if you were to comp the quarterbacks, they're not even in the same galaxy for most people.
Finally, Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen going to bring their teams to Buffalo Monday night. It's a potential AFC Championship game preview. Both quarterbacks this season have scored more rushing touchdowns than have thrown interceptions. It's 3-1 for Allen, 2-1 for Mahomes.
That's a good stat.
True or false, the two quarterbacks will combine for more rushing touchdowns than interceptions when they meet Monday night.
True. I think they know what they're doing in Buffalo with him. He's had a remarkable season and played really well. And I think they're going to try to run the ball on that Kansas City defense. And Patrick Mahomes, you know, I know he had to come from behind, kind of, will they be able to do this? And he had the last-minute touchdown. I think he played a bad game. I think they played a bad game. I don't think he'll play like that again. I think that this is true.
I'm actually going to be, I don't know what the line's going to end up being. I'm all over Kansas City in that game. I said it last week, and I still feel like it. I think Kansas City is a team that has elite talent all over the place. They got to deal with some injuries now, but I just think they're going to play to teams week in and week out, that it's just hard to engage yourself and be up for every game, and you know you're going to get every team's best shot. When they're locked in like they were against Baltimore, that team appears to be unbeatable. I'll say that this ends up being false. I'm going to go false on this one. I don't think Mahomes will have a rushing touchdown. Allen might, but I could see a pick or two from each of them, or at least one aside, so I'll say this ends up being false.
I think this is false as well. I don't think Mahomes is going to – I don't think he'll try and have a rushing touchdown in this one unless something really goofy happens. Allen will get one. But
does he try to have rushing touchdowns? Most of his is, like, improvised.
Yeah, a lot of it's just scrambling around making plays.
I think that that Buffalo pass rush will have him be throwing it before he gets around the corners and sneaks in. And I think both of these guys are actually due for one themselves, so – no, I don't think they'll have more rushing touchdowns than interceptions.
There you go. NFL true or false every single Tuesday at 1:30. We'll come back and we'll grade it next week and we'll pick four new questions. We'll get into that Tuesday night game coming up here in the final hour. I'm psyched for it. Undefeated Buffalo, undefeated Tennessee. I'm all over the Bills tonight. But we'll get into that one a little bit, what it would mean for Josh Allen, what's on the line in terms of 5-0 starts. They've only done it twice in franchise history in Buffalo. They started 5-0. So we'll get to that coming up in the final hour. I was going to get to baseball next, but I'm going to push that to 2 o'clock because the ALCS and the NLCS, of course, still going on today. But a looming headline out of college football that I would like to get to that could rattle one of the marquee games of the weekend. Also, some interesting comments out of both Oregon and Oregon State camp that need to be discussed. Crunch time next on The Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton, Aloha Division, Vancouver. They are all up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com. Stop by one of the locations today. I was at the Glorious House of Gains this morning.
Let's go!
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate that. Did you see his LeBron meme? picture, his whatever.
Not knowing it was fourth down picture that everybody took, and he just morphed LeBron's head onto it.
That was pretty good. He won his fourth ring. Well done, Tom. Well done. We'll get to some Oregon and Oregon State notes here in a moment because I think there's some compelling things coming out of both of those places.
You think there's compelling things out of Corvallis? I'd love to hear what you think that is.
I do. And I mean, not that it's not earth-shattering, but just a reminder of how good they could be on one side of the ball this year. But before we get there, it does need to be pointed out. Remember yesterday, I think in this very segment, we talked about Dan Mullen, the head coach in Florida. He wants to pack the swamp this weekend. 90,000 fans. That is the primetime game either on ABC or ESPN, one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Florida and LSU, great rivalry, defending champs. Florida's a top 10 team still, even after they lost to Texas A&M. Let's pack the swamp, you bitch, because Texas A&M was able to have fans and he wasn't.
Yeah, that's why they lost, was because there was fans at A&M.
That's why they lost. Well, funny little twist here today. According to sources around the football program at Florida, 19 of their players have tested positive for COVID-19. They are currently reaching out to both Texas A&M, who they just played on Saturday, and already reaching out to LSU, who I just mentioned. They are going to play this, or supposed to play this upcoming Saturday. 19 players would put them likely below the threshold because it's only a Tuesday, and there's probably some more that are going to pop up.
Oh, yeah, they'll get a couple more popping up.
You have to, a reminder, have 53 scholarship-eligible players or just 53 available players in order to play a game. If you're below 53, you are not allowed to play, even if you want to try and play in SEC country, putting the LSU game in extreme doubt this weekend. So it's a good thing Dan Mullen's focusing on how many fans are going to be in the stands. And he said over the weekend, we can do this because our team is doing all the right health and safety things and we're following the right protocols, which they might be because Florida cases are surging right now. But 19 of his players have tested positive for COVID-19.
Well, they live in a state that's completely given up on caring about a global pandemic at all. So I'm not all that surprised that this happened to them. I do find the irony and the karma kind of involved in it. You hope nothing serious transpires because, God, how stupid would he look just as a human being in general, advocating to have 90,000 people at a football stadium so they can have a home field advantage, and then something bad happens. Mm-hmm. You just look, the percentages say these kids are going to be fine. You hope it doesn't pass to the mm-hmm. staff.
No doubt.
You'd also play the math and say more than 19 are going to end up being positive, and that I wouldn't expect LSU and Florida to be played this weekend. Look, you know, going into this year that there's a chance this happens. To be as arrogant and demanding as he is, it's pretty earth shattering for a guy making what he's making and supposed to be the responsible adult in the program. It sucks. It's terrible. You don't want to lose football games like that. I'm not all really that interested in this matchup just because I think LSU is pretty crappy. And
yeah, they're bad this year.
I think Florida's defense isn't very good, but Florida would end up beating them anyway. But it's unfortunate that it comes to this and it boils down to having a game postponed and or canceled a day or two after the head coach demands 90,000 people show up to a football stadium just so the noise can help him win a football game.
Yeah, it was reported earlier this morning, too, by some that they had in the range of 5 to 6 players that tested positive. And then this came from somebody who works for Alligator Sports.
Sure, that sounds valid.
Sure. And it's been, you know, it's been reported by Bruce Feldman and a lot of other people have corroborated it. But they said earlier today that they had 5 or 6 and then a few hours later reported that there's 19. So it just shows you how quickly this can spread.
Yeah.
They probably had a couple of guys that returned positive tests. They did further testing with their players. We'll see how it goes the rest of the week. I just it is a reminder that every time we've talked about the playoff, and that seems like a not very important thing in topics like this, but every time we discuss what the season's going to look like, there's no guarantee on how many games teams are going to eventually end up playing. Remember, Missouri, Vanderbilt has already been postponed in the SEC this week. Florida and LSU now looking like the second game to be postponed. Baylor can't play right now. It feels like half their damn team has COVID,
mm-hmm.
and they can't get it out of the locker room.
It was 42.
Dude, it's nuts right now at Baylor. They're nowhere near being ready to play a football game anytime soon, so they might end up playing like 5 games at the end of the year. It's just one of those strange seasons, and I get the frustration of some have fans and some don't. That highlights the issue of the hypocrisy that we brought up going into the year. Like, that's unfair to allow some fans to pack stadiums and other fans not to. It just is a reminder as a head coach, I wish in this current situation, I get that winning is the end-all be-all for these guys, but the main priority this season should be let's make it through the year healthy, make sure your guys are okay, try and have as normal a season as you possibly can and move on to next year, not packing 90,000 people into a stadium. It just felt like the focus was in the wrong spot, and now we'll see when Florida's able to play again with 19 positive tests on a Tuesday.
Well, I think this is on conference commissioners. I think the NCAA just taking a back seat and bowing out of any obligation, being the NCAA, I think those add up, and that's how you get to this juncture, right, where some fans are allowed in stadiums and other schools or states are not allowing it. The interesting thing to me is they are an SEC country, right? It just means more. Those people love and care about college football to a level that's probably unhealthy for them, but it's all they have because of where they live. I wonder if you ask them, in honesty, if you said, would you rather have football or go to a football game and chance not having football? Do you think that they would vote for football or going to a game and chancing it?
I think they would vote for football. I would hope, at least.
Okay, so like that's what's remarkable to me about all of this. As you mentioned, we talked about A&M yesterday. I mentioned the Georgia game a week ago. Like, this is about making money and nothing else. There's nothing that benefits these universities or these programs. It's not about caring about the fans. Spare me with that BS. It's not about letting the kids be cheered on by their fan base. Spare me with that BS. This is strictly about making as much money as you can because you're going to lose some. And it's still, well, it's not shocking, but it's kind of, I find it interesting and almost a little comical that these same fan bases that need or want football so damn bad are also the same ones that don't just maybe go, well, let's just not go to games and at least we'll get it on TV. And
right.
Maybe we can meet up together at each other's houses. They can't stop people from doing that. Mm-hmm. And have our own little tailgate in somebody's backyard and then watch the game together. It's not a priority in certain states. And somebody did a little, like a moving graph. It was 2 minutes. I watched it with the wife last night.
Yeah, but the case numbers in states.
The case numbers
country.
In the top, I don't know. It looked like 25 states, like half the country. Yeah,
it started in June and went all the way through the end of September.
It started in June, and obviously it started with blaming one political side and look how they're handling it, and this is what we're going to do, and it's going to be drastically different. And if, as you watch those graphs starting in June all the way to where we're at, not only do the states shift and move down and other states shift and move up, it's the obvious states that you can guess that are dealing and getting hit hardest, right? You said this during a commercial break. Oklahoma City is currently running out of ICU beds. Nobody in Oklahoma cares. Texas, kind of the same thing. Florida, we know Florida doesn't care. We heard from Golliver. See it in, you know, you see it in the swamp. People want to show up at the swamp at 90,000. So this is what you have to expect if you're going to allow fans to show up. If you're not living in a community that cares as much as other communities, it's a risk. And it doesn't mean they can end up being A-okay out of all of it. I hope they are, but this is part of playing football during a global pandemic, is balancing what's important and then what's a way for us to do this and not have to worry as much. I think you'd still get positive cases because they're college students, but this has always kind of been the risk.
This was always going to happen, and it's happening right now at Florida. 19 players reportedly today testing positive for COVID, which clearly puts into question the game against LSU this weekend that their head coach was focusing on packing 90,000 people into the swamp.
I'd get a lot of joy, personally, if the Pac-12 actually got to play all seven games.
They do think, yeah.
And the SEC played like five.
Wouldn't
I would
be pretty
find
funny
that
at the end of the
so hilarious.
I'm with you on that one. I didn't get to the Oregon at Oregon State notes, so I'll get to those coming up in the final hour of the show. Don't forget the mail sack as well. Get your questions in 503-250-1080. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton and Loa Division, Vancouver. They are all up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com. Stop by one of the locations. I'll be back at the Glorious House of Gains tomorrow morning. Also in the final hour, on top of the mail sack and the Oregon and Oregon State notes, we got to dive into some baseballs. The ALCS and NLCS continued today. Game 3 on the AL side, game 2 on the NL side. We had a starting pitcher scratched earlier this morning. What does it mean for the team that lost game 1?
Well, let's just talk the ALCS. The NLCS is over.
It's over. There's no chance.
It's over. There's no point.
And we'll get to Tuesday night football. Buffalo and Tennessee, man. I can't wait for that one. Load of final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.